Welcome to Directly Speaking. Today, I am so excited to have Ben Yahalom of True Classic with us. Ben and I had the opportunity to get together at Brand Innovators in Shop Talk this year, and I really enjoyed our conversations. For those of you guys who don't know True Classic, it's a menswear company that creates a range of timeless, everyday essentials designed to be versatile, comfortable, and good-looking. And in his role as president of True Classic, Ben is responsible for shaping True Classic's strategic vision, setting the company goals and priorities, and overseeing the entire organization. Ben, I'm so pumped to have you with us today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Pumped to be here as well.
For the listeners who don't really know your brand, why don't you get started with a quick overview of True Classic? You guys have been on a rocket ship the last couple of years. You know, why don't you bring us up to speed?
Let's do it. So we launched True Classic back in 2019 with a pretty simple mission in mind of we want to empower everybody out there, and I mean everybody, to look good and feel good. And we thought to start with just developing a very simple SKU of the perfect crew t-shirt. By perfect, we mean best fitted, highest quality, and offered at a reasonable price that people can afford. And when we did that, the product market fit was awesome. We really started serving a very clearly underserved part of the market of men looking for their everyday essentials. And ever since then, we've been on a crazy growth trajectory and expansion across products, channels, and markets. And on the products, we launched 15 plus categories at this point: activewear, chinos, jeans, jacket, underwear, socks. So we really help him complete his wardrobe. We're also looking into potentially expanding into females. When it comes to channels, we started with a website. We then launched on Facebook, Instagram shops, and our own app, and as well as Amazon, 5 retail locations, looking to expand those as well. And markets, we started as a US company, and now we're globally operating in 192 markets, to be exact. So a lot has been going on, but the mission stayed similar.
So what did you do on Sundays for the last 3 years?
No Sundays. Every day is a work day over here. A lot has been going on, but not much Sundays for myself.
So, you know, you tell a vision of where you guys are selling across a huge amount of channels with a lot of different products. And even though you started small, one of the things that I thought was really unique is your ability to do this and do it profitably. Would you care to tell the team a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. So we bootstrapped this brand, I should have mentioned, back in 2019, and we were able to bootstrap it profitably past 9 figures in 2 short years, which is very, very, very fast. When you think about a brand like ours that is bootstrapped, there is just no other option but to be profitable, because where are you going to fund the growth from, right? So we had that mentality from the get-go. If we want to build a legitimate, sustainable business, we do want to serve our customers. We're definitely not gouging them. We're offering, in my opinion, very competitive price points, but we got to make sure that we are operating a sustainable business and are able to cover all our costs. So the focus has been there since the very beginning to really look at what we call a fully loaded P&L, really understanding every single part of that income statement and making sure that we have enough funds to keep this growing and rolling, right? So a lot of what has been fueling our growth is very aggressive advertising spend. So you have to really know how much incremental revenue and contribution profit you're generating as a function of the money that you spend.
Is it difficult to keep your focus on that as you radically expand the channels you're in?
It is, but it's we just try to use the same mindset and methodology, if you will, in everything we do. So you do expand into different channels that have different unit economics. For example, retail might be a little bit more of like an investment at the moment. However, when you start taking into account the full impact that different channels drive, they are all ROI positive for us. So retail is an example. We are working towards fully breaking even inside the four walls. However, there's all the online impact, right? And the advertising impact of having those stores out there, allowing people to try our products. And we see when, for example, people come and shop with us online, some mentioned that they actually came to our site or first heard about us in a retail environment. So we know that there is more of a lift from the retail channel on the online business. But as a general rule of thumb, we are not interested in operating any line of business, channel, or product line that is not profitable.
Let's switch gears and talk about your advertising investment and how you've approached it. I know you come from Meta and very invested in that performance. I'm curious as to where you saw the need to expand beyond Meta in terms of your growth.
Yeah, absolutely. So we started on Meta, as you mentioned, and I think us and many others are kind of like in this like social boom, if you will, of growing on top of social. the way we look at it is we don't really play favorites. We just try them all, right? So on the channels we advertise on, so Meta or Facebook and Instagram, as I will forever call it, Google with YouTube search, we do TikTok, we do podcasts, we do TV with Tatari. We are testing into direct mail, do influencers, a bunch of different things. When it comes to the need, like, we believe fundamentally that you should diversify your channel mix, both in terms of sales channels as well as marketing channels. And so fundamentally, that's what we try to do anyways. But what we do is we try to understand how far can we push a given marketing channel up until a point where we hit our, what I call, efficiency constraint, right? So when it comes to customer acquisition, we look at it from a, like, a contribution profit per customer. So looking at it, not just from like a return on ad spend in the shape of revenue or CAC, but looking at fully loaded, not just revenue, but product costs, fulfillment, pick and pack, shipping, expected returns, exchanges, customer service, tickets, like everything we know about those customers, net, net, where are we landing on that initial order? If it's at zero, that means we actually were able to break even. That's a good thing because we have that customer and they will come back and we're going to start becoming profitable on them later on. If it's below that, we're trying to think about, should we invest? And if so, how much? When should we be expecting to get paid back? And then you go into every one of those channels. And the two questions I have in mind for each of them is, how many of those customers can you get for me? At what level of investment in the shape of contribution profit per customer? If you can get me unlimited customers for a break-even point, I will spend to you up to that point. And every one of those channels, from my perspective, is a fair game. Do everything you can to maximize the opportunity on the channel. And then it's really a balancing act of, like, how far can you push on that trade-off between efficiency and scale. I have yet to find any other channel that is not Meta that allows us to spend at the levels that we are able to spend there while still maintaining efficiencies. But it doesn't mean that we won't take any available efficiencies at any given level of scale on every other channel. We absolutely will. And that's how we kind of, like, balance out the marketing mix.
Gotcha. So you may not be able to dump as many dollars in, for example, Google, but you can, at the point at which, as long as you're making that break even, to turn that into a long-term profitable customer, you'll spend to that point.
Exactly.
The relentless focus on all the costs associated with it is very unique in that business. Huge compliment to you.
Thank you.
So let's pivot for a second and change gears to talk about you. Did you ever see yourself being in menswear? You know, you came out of Meta. Tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had this really cool experience working at Meta because I was part of this disruptors group. And in a nutshell, Meta has over 5 billion people or so across their family of apps. So Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, etc. And about 200 million or so businesses. And within them, we used to basically select, and they still do, about 80 or 90, maybe 100 max accounts or businesses that we believe have the highest ability and the highest potential to grow. So you can imagine all the most successful direct-to-consumer, digitally native e-commerce brands kind of being part of that group. And I've just had a front row seat, if you will, on just all the fastest growing brands out there. What were they made out of? I have never seen a true classic. And when I worked with the founders here since the kind of like early days, I just was blown away how we were able to enter a commoditized space and bootstrap the brand and cross 9 figures profitably in 2 years. I still believe that this might be this one in however many, there's over 330 million companies out there in the world type of stories. And when you really think about it beyond the, what should I call, the financial accomplishment, right? Or the financial performance here, what really shows me and us is how big of a problem we're actually solving out there for customers. Like, we are putting ourselves second, if that makes sense. We're really serving them, right? I can give you a perfect example in clothing. Is every brand out there pretty much puts their logos on all their clothes. We don't. And the reason we don't is because we ask our customers, do you like wearing visible logos? And the answer is majority of them don't. And when you think about that, you have a commercial conflict, right? Because every brand wants their clothing to be a walking advertisement, right? For them to increase awareness and recognition, all that stuff. So how do you balance the two? And as a company to date, I'm pretty proud to say that we have always prioritized the customer over anything and everything we do. And so it was pretty fun for me to watch that. And even reading reviews, you know, people who are, let's say, larger guys who might not feel so confident, right? Say how amazing they finally feel having, you know, let's say a t-shirt or a jacket that makes them look good, that makes them
feel great
and empowered. And it's like, it's simple. It's not rocket science, right? But it's impactful. So that was really appealing to me and something that drew me into it. But no, I did not have a dream to run an apparel brand.
Well, not to pivot back to the brand, and it's no mistake I'm wearing Two Classic today, but one of the things I love about it, talking about the logo, is that I can wear this to work, throw a linen jacket over, go out to dinner with my wife, and I've got the same shirt on, and it still feels good, and it looks good both ways.
That's great to hear, and I'm glad you love it.
All right, well, let's come back to you. So you're working in the disruptor space at Meta. You're seeing a lot of direct-to-consumer brands. You see a gap in this, but what are some of the other surprises you saw while you were working there? Because you really got to your point, a front row seat at a lot of those D2C brands.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different things you see, right? One is you mentioned a lot about kind of like that profitability mindset. When I was there, it was still in those days where, you know, growth at all costs was a thing. You know, a lot of VC money out there poured on those companies, just show them new customers, just show them top line revenue, nothing else matters. And then there was this like really big shift. EBITDA is king now, not revenue, right? Like we need EBITDA, we need profitability. I actually think a lot of brands have been still lagging based on their quote unquote old practices and really got into trouble for that, right? So if you look at just some of the most notable, you know, D2C brands, if you will, like the V1 of D2C brands out there that completely burned in flames because they did not build a sustainable business model from day one. Because if you cannot grow profitably, the profit may never show up. Other pieces are around how analytical you need to be in order to run effective brands. And I'm a very analytical person, but I feel like I've just gotten more and more analytically inclined as I've noticed how many quote unquote bad decisions are being made out there, right? Even when people think that they're making data-driven decisions, they're not challenging themselves to ask themselves, are those the right data sources? Am I thinking about the right way? What is this metric? What does it tell me? How do I analyze it if it goes up or down? Like what decisions do I make based on that, right? And so I've seen a lot of just poorly defined decision frameworks and analytical frameworks. So that's something we take insanely, insanely seriously over here to really try and solidify our, you know, approach. And the last piece I would say is speed. One of our core values here is go fast. And I believe that speed matters. It matters a lot more than people might realize. And that environment, while you want to be kind of like analytical and substantiated in your decision frameworks and how you go about business, you gotta move fast, and done is better than perfect, and it's a race. And so if you really take that to the degree we do, I think you stand to win personally. And I feel like a lot of brands out there are just not moving fast enough.
And it's interesting you talk about speed, but you also talk about measurement. It's hard to leverage probably that speed against being methodical and decisive. So it's a real magic secret sauce you've got there.
Yeah, it's like get the best, like the fact that you don't have it perfect doesn't mean that you can get a decent proxy in place and then continue to perfect that proxy as things evolve. But don't let that analysis paralysis take over. You know, that's basically the take we have here. We recognize that many of the things we do are still very much suboptimal, but we work on those two things. Like, don't slow us down. If something slows us down, we call it out. It's like, no, we have to move fast here. And then separately, it's like, how are we making decisions and how do we set the right direction while we kind of like continue to run? And so it is a little bit of a conflict for sure. But I think that speed ultimately matters. And for me, there is kind of like, I don't know, maybe the difference between accuracy and precision maybe, but basically like I need to be directionally correct. I don't need to be perfectly on the on like the target, if that makes sense, you know? So
gotcha. That's
where we try to operate. It's like, get me 80% there with the right way of thinking about it. And I continue to optimize from that. Once I'm 80% there, I'm comfortable running and running fast.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. You don't, and it's because it's going to take 80% of your effort to get the next 20% accuracy, and you don't have the time for that.
Exactly.
Good killer. All right. So new world we're living in, deprecation of the cookie, iOS 14, lots of stuff. What does that mean to somebody starting a digitally native brand today? And can they do what you've done?
It's a great question. I'll tell you my take on that. First is brands would benefit from targeting really large total addressable markets, or what I call blue ocean strategies. I believe that if you go into a really big one like that, you still can take advantage of all those tools in digital marketing, and the efficacy won't necessarily get degraded the way it would had you started today a very niche company. Because if you think about the likes of, you know, iOS 14, I think is the biggest wave maker, right, in the industry right now. The biggest deal is that the signal line between what happened on your website or your app kind of like was cut, and Facebook and others have not been able to see that information flowing to them. However, if you have a really large volume of conversions because you are operating at a high, kind of like really large market with a lot of volume, you're not as susceptible to it.
Okay.
And also, if you think about a brand like ours, you are able to put our advertisement in front of pretty much anybody, even if you're a female. We have a lot of females buying for their significant others or their nephews or their sons, and it's still going to be relevant. But if you don't have that precise targeting or optimization and you have a very niche product, a lot of it might be kind of like this like spray and pray method that just doesn't work anymore. And it's really just going to prevent you from being able to scale. So that's like really big one consideration. Second is to just do anything in your power to salvage that. And so for us, as an example, we work with a company called Blotout. They have this edge tag that helps us get as much signal as we can to be able to optimize and measure our campaigns as effectively as possible. So those are probably my two big ones.
That's good guidance. All right. How about you? What inspires you? Obviously you're working 24/7 for True Classic, but what gets you up in the morning? What makes you excited?
These days I'm really inspired by AI, and I've always been a big kind of like tech guy and love technology, but I feel like the generation of AI that all of us are very familiar with is around, to simplify it, like ranking algorithms, right? You're on Meta and you're trying to show the right ad or the right post, the right person. How do I rank the gazillions of posts or available inventory to show you the right thing? Or if you're on Netflix, how do I recommend you the next best show you're most likely to be interested in given what you watched, right? So all of those ranking algorithms on Netflix and Amazon and Google, etc., was a big thing. And now there is this generative AI, which blows my mind for two reasons. One, what it's already been able to do. And I'm not just talking about ChatGPT. I think that's just the beginning of it. I'm talking about like the gazillion of AI tools that are going on out there. And second is the speed of progression. It feels like every day I open up LinkedIn and I see 10 new AI tools I haven't seen yesterday.
Right.
And it just keeps getting faster and faster, and AI kind of like training other AI. And it inspires me because I think it's going to be insanely, insanely disruptive, not just to e-commerce or D2C, but just to humanity as a whole.
Absolutely.
And I feel like there is obviously the scary use cases of where that can take us, but I actually see a lot of economic opportunity around it, on how everybody can elevate themselves using those, like, if you will, superpower tools to just improve your productivity and your output and your accuracy. And I feel like businesses like ours and others who are not going to lean into it are going to really fall behind pretty quick.
They will.
I find myself geeking a lot about the future of AI these days.
That's really cool. And, you know, I don't remember who it was, but somebody told me at, or somebody was speaking at Shop Talk or ETL, one of them, that said that, guess what? Today, AI is the dumbest it's ever going to be. You know, and then when you think about it that way, it's true and just insane.
It's crazy. And I already see it in so many places, even just the writing applications, right? I don't know. I'm opening up a job description, so I don't type it anymore. I just like create a job description for fill in the blank, and it just spits it out to you right there. It's like every little task you have to start asking yourself, like, am I wasting my time here, or, you know, should I just kind of like give it to AI?
Exactly. It's awesome. All right. I always like to throw this one out at you because we all have an answer for it. If you could go back 10 years and teach Ben something that he didn't know then that you wish he had, what would it be?
The power of relationships. And I can think about a lot of different things, but I'm a very practical person. I've always been very kind of like analytical, math oriented, do good work. I never realized earlier on how powerful relationships actually are. And not just in terms of like, you know, leveraging them to get something that you want, but learning from, you know, fellow people, pressure testing your own ideas, and like collaborating with people and seeing what that can unlock. And nobody really teaches you that. You kind of have it, I guess, naturally, maybe or maybe not to a degree, but nobody really teaches you what it really takes to build strong relationships at scale. And that's something that I feel like has been tremendously helpful for me in my career, and something I wish I knew to put a more dedicated effort into earlier on.
I love that. And it's really true. You know, at some point, probably about 10 years ago, I decided I didn't have to be the smartest guy in the room. I just need to ask people questions and my life's going to be a lot better, you know?
100%.
Killer. Right. All right. Well, if somebody wants to reach out and connect with you, what's the best way, Ben?
LinkedIn. If, yeah, that's probably the best method to start.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on. I really enjoyed our talk at Brand Innovate. It's been great getting to know you. I really, have just valued our time together and have learned a lot from you.
Amazing. Likewise. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you for joining us today on Directly Speaking. We hope you enjoyed the content and really enjoyed the opportunity to get to know Ben better with me. And we hope to have you with us again soon. Take care. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.